Fall is all about cozy comforts, but when you're prioritizing your health, it's easy to feel like you're missing out. With Hero Bread, you can enjoy all your fall favorites because they're made with Hero Bread sliced bread loaves, tortillas, bagels, dinner rolls, and more. Try their all-new Hero Noodles with 12 grams of protein and just 80 calories. You won't believe Hero Bread's options have 0 to 5 grams net carbs and are high fiber from the taste and texture. They've even got small batch drops of indulgent favorites like the popular Hero Croissant. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code FALL25 at checkout. That's FALL25 at HERO.co. All figures are per serving of Hero Bread. Contains 2 to 18 grams of fat per serving. See the product nutrition panels on hero.co for more information.
Get started on your journey and get to where you want to go with an auto loan from Wasatch Peaks at 4.99% APR. Just call, click, or come by to any Wasatch Peaks branch today. On approved credit, member eligibility required.
Get to where you want.
Follow the Minds of Madness on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts to listen to our episodes early and ad-free and get access to monthly exclusive episodes. Go to patreon.com/madnesspod. You can also hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts for ad-free episodes. We've got links in our show notes.
The opinions expressed in the following episode do not necessarily reflect those of the Minds of Madness podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
There's something peculiar about shocking news. The more unbelievable it sounds, the more likely we are to cling to the very first version we hear. Psychologists call it anchoring bias. Our minds grab hold of that first story like a life raft, and then reshape the details to fit. In criminal cases, this can happen fast. A teenager stabs his mother, and the narrative writes itself. Violent kid. No respect for authority, a tragedy everyone saw coming. Before we hear a word from the defense, the picture is already painted. And the more complex the truth really is, the harder it becomes to shake that first impression. Especially when the story feels so cut and dried, so obvious, that to question it seems absurd. But what if that version was wrong? Or at least incomplete? What if the first version blinds us from the truth? In the case of 17-year-old Colin Griffith, the narrative hardened almost immediately. A dangerous teen, a murdered mother, an open and shut case. But then the public defender started digging, and what she uncovered suggested something else entirely. Join me now as we take a closer look at the death of Kathy Griffith, a 39-year-old teacher and mother, stabbed to death by her own teenage son, and discover how a case that looked open and shut at first slowly revealed deeper layers of conflict, desperation, and unanswered questions. In the heart of Central Florida lies a unique slice of retirement paradise known as the Hamptons. It's a mobile home country club reserved for residents over 55. Double-wide trailers sit amongst swaying palm trees, surrounding an 18-hole golf course. It's the kind of place where retirees and snowbirds come to escape harsh winters and enjoy their golden years in comfort. A safe, quiet, and unpredictable place. Until September 8th, 2024. That Sunday evening, a black Volkswagen sat in the driveway of Susan Detman. But Susan wasn't home. She was in the Florida Keys. The car belonged to her 17-year-old grandson, Colin Griffith.
Well, I was preparing to go to church. It was about 4:45, and I was putting my purse and everything on the coffee table, and I looked up and I saw the black car parked in the driveway.
Sally Bell lived just across the street from Susan's. Neighbors had seen Colin before during visits, but this evening, another neighbor, Nancy Jones, witnessed a confrontation.
A white car pulled into the driveway, immediately sped out of the driveway, and then parked on the street. The lady got out of the car, slammed the door, slung her purse over her shoulder, and proceeded into the house. I thought it was granddaughter. She looked very young. She immediately went into the house. I went back into the house and started doing some dishes and stuff. And then I walked back outside, sat down on my lanai, and I seen the lady standing on the top step, and I just seen an arm come out and grab her by the shoulder, by her hair, and I just turned my head and immediately went back into the house. And all I seen was the shoulder and the hand come out. I just, like I said, when I seen the hand come out and grab her by the shoulder, I turned and went back into the house, and I said, they'll probably work it out. I thought it was his sister or Susan's granddaughter. And I said, they're probably having a little spat and they'll work it out.
The young woman Nancy saw wasn't Colin's sister. It was 39-year-old Kathy Griffith, Colin's mother. And Sally Bell had witnessed the same interaction from inside her home.
A white car was in the road. I saw a lady come out, and she had clothes in her hand, and she went around to the passenger side of the car, and she put the clothes in the car. The young man was standing on the driver's side. He wasn't doing anything, just standing there. And she went around, and she put the clothes on the passenger side, and then she was talking, and her hands were going, swinging her arms and talking to him. And she was right up in his face, you know, was talking to him. I couldn't hear what she was saying. And she went around the back of the car, up close to him, and she was swinging her arms again. And then he reached out and to grab her hair. She said, "Let go of my hair. You're hurting me." And he reached up and opened the door, and they went inside, pulled her inside.
At that point, Sally and Nancy didn't see a reason to call police. So Sally left for church, and Nancy went into her kitchen.
40, maybe 45 minutes later, I was in my kitchen and I heard sirens and everything. I turned around and I seen cop cars in my yard and they were everywhere.
Nancy immediately phoned Susan, letting her know something was happening at her home.
He was in the driveway and his arms were red and the cops were all around him. And I was on the phone talking to Susan, and Susan told me to go over and tell him that she would be there in a couple hours or wherever she was at. She was in the Keys. And so I walked outside, and I waved at Colin, and I said, "Susan's on her way." He looked very emotional, yes. He'd been crying. I could see him crying in the driveway. It was an emotional wreck, but I didn't know. Still, I did not know what happened.
The red Nancy noticed on Colin's arms was blood. What she didn't realize was that deputies were there because of a 911 call Colin made. Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd recalled what Colin told the dispatcher that afternoon.
Here's what he said. He said he and his mother had a very long fight, and she fell on a knife, and she's bleeding from the neck. So our 911 operators appropriately were giving them instructions on how to do life-saving techniques.
But once deputies went inside, the scene they found didn't match the story Colin had given.
What we found inside was this knife. This knife is 12 inches long, and of the 12 inches, 8 inches of that is the blade. So he's saying that his mother fell on this knife.
Deputy Alexander Walker was one of the first officers to step inside the residence.
First thing I did when I entered the scene, I noticed a single AirPod as well as the AirPod case on the ground. From there, I heard a male subject inside the house shouting, "I'm inside the kitchen." And while walking to the kitchen, I saw a blood-covered knife. In the kitchen, I saw a large pool of blood around the subject's head and neck area, as well as blood spatter going up the side of the cabinet. The subject was positioned over the deceased's head. For doing normal CPR and everything, assuming everybody's been taught and seen videos on doing CPR from beside the person, never over top their head.
Colin was then escorted outside by another deputy.
At first, he was in a somewhat manic state, but again, once he went outside, he was more calm and collected.
Soon after, fire and rescue crews arrived. Among them was Captain James Parker, who found Kathy Griffith on the kitchen floor.
She was not responsive, to which I could then tell she was not breathing. A pulse was checked for and not obtained. CPR was initiated for a brief few seconds until further extended injuries could be checked, and then it was determined among the crew and myself that the injuries were not sustainable.
Captain Parker also examined the wound itself.
The stab wound itself did not seem to be very wide. It was kind of narrow in size. Upon further inspection after starting the CPR, it was obvious that every time I did a compression, there was air that was coming through the wound itself. So it was obviously pretty deep. It looked like a lot of the vasculature and the stuff inside of the wound itself was very obvious and could be seen, and that it had cut major areas such as the arteries.
But what struck Captain Parker the most wasn't the injury. It was Colin's demeanor.
From my personal experience, it was a little odd in nature. He didn't seem very distraught or upset. He seemed kind of calm upon my entering the residence. And then upon exiting the residence, he seemed to almost have a, not a full argument, but somewhat argumentative with the deputies that were trying to assist him out of the residence.
39-year-old Kathy Griffith was pronounced dead at the scene, killed by a single stab wound to the neck. Kathy had been a dedicated educator who'd overcome tremendous personal challenges to build a successful life and career. She was a virtual school English teacher, beloved by her students and known for going the extra mile, the kind of teacher who truly cares. Her own life had been marked by struggle from an early age. Kathy became a mother at just 13. She married the child's father, and nearly a decade later, gave birth to Colin at the age of 22. By the time Colin was 12, the marriage had ended and moved in with his father in Oklahoma for 3 years. When his father passed away in 2023, Kathy was determined to make up for the lost time with her son and poured her energy into him, something her social media made clear. Posts showed a mother doting on her teenage son with loving gifts, exotic cruises, the latest tech, even a brand new Volkswagen Jetta in May 2024 as an early graduation present. "I love you and am so proud of you," she wrote on Instagram, alongside a photo of Colin smiling on the hood of the car. It was more than just a gift. It was part of a pattern. A mother trying to pour love, time, and opportunities into her son she'd been separated from for years. And from the outside, it seemed to be working. Colin was thriving in school, set to graduate early with college credits already under his belt and a 3.7 GPA. To friends and family watching from a distance, they seemed like a picture-perfect mother and son, a story of second chances, a story of unconditional love. But what the police saw told a different story. For a year and a half, they'd been called time and again to incidents involving Colin Griffith, and history made them skeptical about the account he gave about what had happened inside his grandmother's house that day. You know those nights when you just don't sleep, and the next day, you're dragging, exhausted, and everything just feels harder? Well, that's where CBD from CB Distillery can make a real difference. But it's not just sleep. CB Distillery has solutions that work with your body to help with stress, pain after exercise, even mood and focus. And it's all made with the highest quality, clean ingredients. No fillers, just premium CBD. Imagine waking up rested or enjoying your day without the nagging aches and pains. That's the real win of CB Distillery Solutions. That's why over 2 million people trust CB Distillery. We've been using CBD products for years, and I really appreciate it on those nights after a long day at the gym, and my back is killing, and I just want to go to sleep. So, if you're ready for better sleep, less stress, and feeling good in your own skin again, try CBD from CB Distillery. And right now, you can save 25% off your entire purchase. Visit CB Distillery and use promo code MADNESS. That's cbdistillery.com, promo code MADNESS. cbdistillery.com. Specific product availability depends on individual state regulations. Colin was taken into custody immediately following his mother's death, arrested and charged with murder. 4 days later, on September 12th, Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd stood before reporters and laid out what investigators had uncovered.
A cold-blooded murder of a 39-year-old mother by her 17-year-old son. So let me tell you about this. It all started on September the 8th, which was this last Sunday, when we got a 911 call from Colin Griffith, who's 17 years of age. When the deputies arrived, he met the deputies outside, and he was calm, cool, collected, not upset, and he had blood on him. We started our investigation at that point. The next morning, at the medical examiner's office and the autopsy, the medical examiner said it is not reasonable or plausible that she died the way that he said she did. Just didn't happen.
According to Sheriff Judd, what happened inside Kathy Griffith's house wasn't an isolated outburst. It was part of a troubling pattern that had been building for more than a year.
But let me go through some details, because as we start to peel back the layer of this onion, we find out that this is not just a singular event with Colin stabbing his mother in the neck and ultimately killing her. Here's what we found, and follow me as I read a timeline to you. In March of 23, he came to Charlotte County, Florida to live with his mother. But 6 months later, guess what happened? He's Baker acted.
In Florida, being Baker acted means someone is placed under an involuntary mental health hold, usually when they're seen as a danger to themselves or others. That September, just after being released from his Baker act, Colin made a chilling threat.
So it's September. As he's getting out of the original Baker Act, he makes a statement that, well, I'll kill myself or I'll kill my mother by shooting or stabbing her.
Deputy Kerry Welch was the officer who documented that incident.
I was called there for the defendant being released from the facility, and they didn't feel that he was ready to be released. He was saying that he didn't want to go home. He made several statements about wanting to harm his mother and grandmother if he were to go back into their custody. Specifically said that he had, or something along the lines of, that he had done it before and that he would do it again, and said that he would either push them out of a car, stab them, or shoot them.
Colin was re-Baker-acted and returned to the facility. But even after his release, the concerns didn't go away. Deputy Michael Schneider recalled what happened next.
I was dispatched there. The call notes had said that I need to be there for a release of a potentially violent patient. They had a concern that the patient that is to be released might be has violent tendencies or might act out. And when the doors opened, the young man came straight up to me and approached me and said I needed to be Baker acted. Usually people want to leave. He was focused. He had a goal, for sure. He was somebody on a mission. He looked at me and said, I need to be Baker acted because I'm either going to go kill myself or he said his mother. And he was readmitted to the facility as a Baker act.
Despite those warnings, Kathy pushed for her son's release. She wanted him home. But 2 months later, deputies were called again.
Now we're 2 months later. This is November 2023. Colin then is arrested for domestic violence on his mother. And the reason he battered his mother is because she was disciplining him and took his video game privileges away. So he beat up his mother. He pushed her to the ground and he stomped on her. He claims self-defense when he stomped his mama, but he went to jail anyway.
body cam footage captured Colin giving his version of events.
We sat down and we ate, and she started talking to me about how a bunch of really bad shit. And then when I got up and was like, you can't just do that. And she was telling me to shut up. She hit me in the face. And then I reacted like this. She grabbed onto me. I hit her in the stomach. And then it was just reactive, grabbed her. She got to the ground. I grabbed the phone. I started recording and then I left.
But Kathy denied hitting her son, and officers found no marks on Colin's face. She, on the other hand, had visible injuries on her stomach and hand. Kathy's mother, Susan, was there during the confrontation. She admitted she hadn't seen the exact moment violence broke out, but witnessed the aftermath.
You said next thing you know, they're on the ground. Did you see how they got on the ground?
No. Okay. No, I was trying to call also.
Okay.
So, but I was very worried she was on the ground, and I went in between them.
Mm-hmm.
Colin did not want to come back home.
Okay.
And I said, you don't have a choice. Mm-hmm. You have to go back home. And he said, no, I want foster care. And even the corporal was saying, foster care isn't going to be good for you. You have issues. You have to work on them.
Mm-hmm.
An emotional exchange between Colin and Kathy were also captured as he sat in the back seat of a squad car.
I was saying, Mom, I'm not a psychopath. I'm just trying to peacefully leave or peacefully coexist and just figure something out. And she kept telling me to shut up and shut up. And when I wouldn't shut up, she hit me.
No, that's not what happened, Colin. That's not what happened. You never said you wanted to peacefully coexist.
I've been saying that.
The very next day, Colin was released back into his mother's care. But almost immediately, he began making disturbing threats again, saying that if he was forced to stay with Kathy, he would kill her. Officers told Kathy he would have to be Baker-acted yet again. One of them expressed frustration of watching the same pattern repeat itself.
I struggle with a kid that's being released from jail and saying, if you bring me back there, she's gonna die.
If we don't do something,
then, shame on us.
Yeah, then we're not.
Shame on us.
Then
we failed.
Job
and we failed you. And I'm not failing you. Nor am I going to fail your son.
According to Sheriff Grady, things continued to deteriorate in the Griffith household.
12th of February in 2024, he has an argument with his mother, and he runs away from Charlotte County and comes back to Auburndale to his grandmother's house. Now, his grandmother's not there. So our deputies who found him up here as a missing persons reported in Charlotte County turned him over to DCF.
DCF, the Department of Children and Families, took over his case.
2 days later, on the 14th of February, he's reunited with his mother by DCF. Colin made the statement that, I don't want to go home. I'll use any force necessary to avoid it, to include killing my mother. So they didn't make him go home on the 14th, but about 2 weeks later, in March 2024, they reunite Colin with his mother again. Now let's advance 4 months later to September the 6th. Colin has an argument about home chores, and he flees from his mother's house again and comes up to his grandmother's house. Grandmother's not there. She's in the Keys. So then mom lets the event calm down, and she tells her son, hey, you need to come home. And she asks him to come home and face his responsibility. Colin says, I'm not coming back home. That was September the 7th. So now we're to the fateful day on September 8th. Mom drives up here to Auburndale. She arrives at 4:00. At about 4:30, witnesses and neighbors see Colin and mom arguing outside, and Colin grabs his mother by the hair and drags her into the house. That's when we receive a 911 call where Colin said, I've had a very, very long fight with mom, and she fell on a knife and she's bleeding from the neck. Our investigation clearly and unequivocally shows that circumstance did not occur like that.
Laid out all at once, Colin's history with law enforcement was shocking enough, but Sheriff Grady Judd had a revelation that was even more disturbing. This wasn't the first time Colin had killed someone, and it wasn't the first time he'd killed a parent.
And it's not just a singular murder, but as we got into the investigation, we found that about a year and a half, maybe a year and 8 months, 9 months earlier, he murdered his father in Oklahoma.
Back in 2023, 15-year-old Colin was living in Oklahoma with his father, Charles. According to Kathy, life at that house was far from normal. In court filings, she accused Charles of abuse, saying he kept Colin isolated, cut off from his friends, from school, and even from her. She claimed her son was showing signs of PTSD, and that after Colin disclosed he was gay, Charles withdrew him from school altogether and kept him confined inside the home. Then on Valentine's Day, that tense household finally erupted. Colin called 911, telling dispatchers he'd shot his father. He claimed Charles had attacked him with a knife, chasing him through the house and cornering him in a bedroom. At first, Colin was arrested and charged with murder.
They released him from that murder charge apparently within a month or so because they were shipping him to his mother that quick. It makes you wonder to what extent and what depth of investigation was done, because my question is, was there anything else that could have been done? Because had Oklahoma been able to act, Catherine would be alive and well today. But because she took him and tried to do like a mother should do and take care of him, she's now dead. Everybody that's special, should be special to him in his life, is dead.
During that same press conference, Sheriff Judd held up a large photo of Colin. His words were unflinching.
When I look at him, I see a psychopath. I see totally erratic behavior to the point that he's already at 17 years of age, shot and killed his father and got away with it, and stabbed his mother in the neck so hard that the knife went all the way through to the back of her neck, and she died there. He's being charged with first-degree murder, and we are asking the state attorney's office to prosecute him as an adult. And I can assure you, beyond into the exclusion of every reasonable doubt, based upon his conduct, had he gone to live with his grandmother at the end of this, and she crossed him, she would be next. He's violent, he's dangerous, he is a dangerous person.
Several weeks later, Kathy's father, Susan's ex-husband, Robert Walentis, called police with his own chilling account. He told them about a conversation he'd had with Colin 6 months before Kathy's death.
My grandson was very aggravated at his grandmother and his mother. He said, "I am so tired of these two bitches. I'm disgusted." He said, "My mom, I keep thinking over and over, I want to slit her throat. I want her to bleed out. I want to smell the blood. I want to feel the blood. I want to feel the life and the blood leaving her body."
By then, Sheriff Judd's version of Colin as a remorseless killer had taken hold. And it wasn't just the brutality of what had happened. It was a pattern. Two parents, two killings, two claims of self-defense, all before his 18th birthday. And by the time Kathy was laid to rest, much of the public had already made up their minds. Colin Griffith was seen as a dangerous, volatile teenager, capable of killing both his parents in less than 2 years.
If you're in charge of school drop-offs like me, then you've probably seen that outlier mom who shows up with a full blowout at 8 a.m., makeup perfectly done like she's heading to a fashion shoot. How does she do it? I'm imagining she's waking up at 4 a.m., so she has at least 3 hours before the kids wake up and all hell breaks loose. For me, I'm showing up to school wearing yesterday's hoodie, clutching coffee like a life raft, with hair lucky enough to have made it into a bun. So when it comes to having a morning wellness routine, never mind blow-drying my hair. It wasn't happening. Now, sure, it could be argued that maybe I just need better time management skills. Or maybe I just need a wellness product that actually gets me, that's not going to judge me, and knows that I'm doing my best just to keep it all together. That's why I started using Live It Up Super Greens. an all-natural blend of over 20 superfoods made with organic vegetables, probiotics, digestive enzymes, and naturally derived ingredients. Designed by nutritionists, third-party tested for purity, and made to be easy on your stomach, free from sugar, dairy, gluten, and anything artificial. And here's the best part. With just one scoop and just 30 seconds of your time mixed with water or in a smoothie, you can promote your gut health, support your immune system, and give yourself that feel-good energy you can count on. There's no grassy taste, no chalky texture, just a tasty drink you'll actually look forward to. 96% of people who take Super Greens daily say it helped them increase their daily intake of vegetables and help them feel healthier. I still might not have time for the blowout every morning, but knowing that I'm starting my day with Live It Up Super Greens makes me feel like I'm at least doing one thing at the beginning of every day for me. And right now, Live It Up is offering Minds of Madness listeners 15% off your first order, including subscriptions, with code MADNESS. Plus, shipping's always free. Head to letsliveitup.com/madness and use code MADNESS for 15% off your first Super Greens order. That's letsliveitup.com/madness using promo code MADNESS for 15% off your first Super Greens order. We've also included a link in our show notes. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
After his arrest, Cullen was assigned a public defender named Amy Thornhill. At first glance, the case looked hopeless. The state had its story, and Thornhill had a teenage client accused of murdering his mother. But as Amy dug into the evidence and spoke with witnesses, she began seeing things differently. The first question was the biggest one. Could Cullen's claim of self-defense be credible, especially when his initial 911 call made it sound like Kathy had simply fallen on the knife?
The 911 call. They want you to believe that proves beyond a reasonable doubt that Cullen murdered his mother and wasn't just defending himself. Don't you think he might be a little scared when he's talking to a 911 operator? Not to mention the possible shock because of what he had been through in a struggle over a knife with his own mom. And don't you think it's reasonable that during a struggle over a knife in that confined area, and who knows what positions anybody was in, state sure can't prove any, that gravity may have played a part in that force that was necessary to cause that wound?
The truth was, there was almost no physical evidence showing exactly what happened inside that trailer. But in Thornhill's view, the little evidence that did exist seemed to support Cullen's version of events.
There was no foreign DNA under Kathy's fingernails. That means she never scratched Cullen with her fingernails. Well, you would expect she would have scratched him with her fingernails if she was actually being dragged into the house or across the living room into the kitchen and being held against her will. No DNA, no scratches. That means no struggle with her fingernails. You know why else she wouldn't have to scratch him at all? Is if she had control of the knife. Because she doesn't need to scratch him and defend herself with her fingernails because she had the knife first. That actually supports that she pulled the knife on Cullen first.
For Thornhill, the question wasn't just what happened that night in the Hamptons. It was what had been happening for years leading up to it. And the more she dug into the family's past, the more she saw a boy raised in dysfunction, trapped between two volatile parents. Charles had allegedly abused Kathy throughout their marriage. Divorce records detailed years of violence. But what the public didn't know were the equally disturbing details about Kathy herself. Court records showed she'd attacked Charles more than once, ramming him with a car, stabbing him with a corkscrew, even burning him with a heat lamp. Yet those arrests were rarely mentioned after her death. Kathy also carried her own struggles, mental illness, addiction, and repeated suicide attempts. Realities later confirmed by her mother, Susan Detman. Kathy's struggles weren't a secret to her family, and in court, her mother, Susan, described just how dark things had become.
She was suicidal, taking pills. She just didn't want to have her life. she drank Everclear as her alcoholic choice. So the first one was while she was still married, and she was very upset, and she had overdosed on prazosin. The second attempt was when she was in Port Charlotte. I had to go over the fence and open the sliding glass door, and she was in her bed, all dressed in black, with a revolver in her hand, overdosed on the oxycodone. There was another attempt with oxycodone again about 4 months later. Then there was an attempt with medication. And then the most recent time was just in August of this year, August 21st. She called me and said she had overdosed on metoprolol, her heart and blood pressure medication, because the other ones didn't work, so she said, I did that.
Susan also testified that Kathy's instability often spilled into her parenting. Punishments for Colin could become extreme.
She was beating him with a belt and making him do push-ups and then holding a weight above his head while he was running in place. And I tried to stop it.
During his time at his mother's house, Colin reported to police that his mother had pulled a gun on him.
Colin told this to police later, by the way, that my mom handed me an envelope and said, here are all the important papers you'll need if I'm gone. Then they are inside the house, and Kathy got her gun and pointed it at her son and said that she was going to either shoot him or herself or both. And then she handed the gun to Colin and said, just shoot me. At one point, sends him outside and says, when you hear the pop, you can come back in. Makes him sit down outside her bedroom with the gun pointed at him while she sits on the bed. At some point, Kathy, I guess, decided not to go through with whatever her plan was. She put the gun away and drove Colin to school. So Colin goes straight to his teacher and says, my mom just pulled a gun on me. She threatened to kill me. She threatened to kill herself. I'm scared. So the teacher immediately goes to the school resource officer, and they get the Charlotte County Sheriff's Office involved. And they did send someone to Kathy's house. Eventually, they convince her to speak with them. She finally says, that never happened. Colin's just making it up because he's upset that he was failing a class and I took away his phone and his AirPods. Sheriff's deputies go back to Colin at the school and say, your mom says you're just mad at her and made the whole thing up. And Colin is like, no, it happened. This is what she did to me. She has a gun in the house. They didn't believe him. They believed Kathy.
Privately, Kathy later admitted to her mother that Colin had been telling the truth.
Originally she denied it. Then she said yes. She pulled out the gun and handed it to Colin and said, just kill me, shoot me.
From that point on, Colin's own words started to shift. His threats became more urgent, more alarming.
Colin repeated again and again, I am scared to be with my mom. If she does something to me again, like pull a gun on me, if she attacks me, I will defend myself and I may hurt her. So they put Colin in a Bacharach facility for those statements. Interestingly, Kathy, rather than being relieved that her son, who allegedly threatened to kill her, is in a safe place, does everything she can to not cooperate with the people in the Bacharach facility, the sheriff's deputies, DCF. They insist, because of what happened in Oklahoma, and because of what he said his mom had done to him, and because he said, I don't feel safe going home because I'm afraid of what she might do to me again and what I will do in response, that he was safest in this facility. Kathy won't sign medical release forms so they can get more information about the family. She won't approve any medication for Colin. And then she hires a lawyer to get him released from the facility against all advice. When they were getting ready to release him to Kathy, he says, do not send me home with my mom. I am scared. She threatened me. If she comes at me, I'm going to defend myself. So they put him back in the Bacharach facility. By the way, they find out she does have a gun. Like, she owns the gun.
Suddenly, Thornhill began to see those disturbing threats Sheriff Grady had described in a different light. to her, they weren't the words of a cold-blooded killer. They were the words of a frightened teenager who believed the only way anyone would listen was that if he threatened harm. Colin understood how the system worked. He knew those threats were the magic words that would place him back into protective custody, anywhere but home with his mother.
Colin told people that he would rather be in the Baker Act facility than at home with his mother. He told people in authority he would rather be in jail than at home with his mother. He told people in authority he would rather be in foster care than at home with his mother. And the state wants you to believe that Colin is just a brat who didn't like the discipline he got, so he murdered his mom. That's also absurd. He would get none of those wonderful things. None of them. He would not have a phone. He would not have an Xbox. He would not go on trips all over the country or the world. And yet he still said, please, re-Baker Act me. Please, don't send me home from jail with my mom. Please, I'd rather go to foster care. Colin was trying to escape his mom because he was scared. He was scared of what she would do to him, and if she attacked him, what he would do in response.
One of the most disturbing patterns Thornhill uncovered was Kathy's habit of forcing Colin out of the house, only to immediately call police and report him as a runaway.
This happens over and over. It's a theme. She will kick him out, but then she'll claim he's a runaway and he must come back. Kathy is insistent that he continue to live with her.
Much of Thornhill's case rested on Ring camera footage from inside Kathy's home. That footage revealed disturbing patterns of manipulation and control.
She claims that Colin attacked her again to law enforcement. She said, he was trying to run away and he battered me. So the sheriff's deputies look at her Ring video and they're like, there was no battery. She tried to step in front of him and block him from leaving, escaping the situation, and may have brushed by her. That's what she was calling a battery and trying to get him arrested. But then she would have probably demanded that he come back home with her.
That same pattern surfaced in other claims. At one point, Kathy told police someone had tried to strangle her.
Colin also knew that Kathy would sometimes make things up to hurt other people. He knew that she claimed someone strangled her. She even claimed that she had video of it, but when the police reviewed it, it showed you she was strangling herself.
Picture this. It's midnight and you're lying in bed, scrolling through this new website you found, hitting the add to cart button on the item you've been looking for. After 15 minutes, you decided you've done enough damage to your wallet and decide to check out. And then you remember, your wallet and card is in the living room and you don't want to get out of bed to go get it. And as you're just about to get ready to abandon that card, that's when you see it, that purple shop button. That shop button that has all your payment and shipping information saved, saving you time while you stay warm in your bed. That's Shopify. There's a reason so many businesses sell with it, because Shopify makes everything easier, from checkout to creating your own storefront. Shopify is the commerce platform behind 10% of all e-commerce in the US, from household names like Mattel and Gymshark to brands just getting started. Shopify gives you that leg up with hundreds of beautiful ready-to-go templates to express your brand style and forget about the code. Tackle all those important tasks in one place, from inventory to payments to analytics and more. Spread your brand's word with built-in marketing and email tools to find and keep new customers. And did I mention that iconic purple Shop Pay button that's used by millions of businesses around the world? It's why Shopify has the best converting checkout on the planet. Your customers already love it. If you want to see less carts being abandoned, it's time for you to head over to Shopify. Sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling today at shopify.com/madness. Go to shopify.com/madness. shopify.com/madness. With all of the background Thornhill had uncovered, she now believed the events leading up to September 8th, 2024, followed a familiar pattern. The family's Ring camera captured the beginning of it, an argument the day before Kathy's death.
There was, in fact, an argument over whether Colin would help her put up a bookshelf. And he is not being entirely respectful to her when he says, "It'll take too long. I have to go to work. Also, there aren't studs on that wall. If we put it up there, it's going to fall and it's probably going to hurt someone." So did he help her put up the bookshelf? Absolutely not. Should he have? Maybe. But he didn't. He was disrespectful to her. But her reaction to that was to kick him out, which she lied about later, too. She claims on the phone with her mom on the Ring video, "I never kicked him out. I never kicked him out." Watch the Ring video. Listen to her words. "Get out and don't come back, even if you're bawling your eyes out. Beyond that, give me your house keys." She took his keys to get back into the house that he lived in.
At his press conference, Sheriff Grady described this as Colin running away because he didn't want to do chores.
Colin has an argument about home chores, and he flees from his mother's house again and comes up to his grandmother's house.
The Ring footage suggested something very different.
So Colin, being kicked out again, calls Susan. Called his grandmother, said, "Mom kicked me out. Can I go to your house?" She said, "Sure." She says, "I'm in the Keys right now, but I'll be there tomorrow." Okay, so it wasn't like he was secretly going to this place where he can have a rager. This is something that has happened multiple times. So he drives to Polk County, got there on Saturday, and did not move.
Sheriff Grady also told reporters that Kathy had calmed down and asked her son to come home.
Mom lets the event calm down and she tells her son, "Hey, you need to come home." And she asked him to come home and face his responsibility.
But Thornhill believed the evidence told another story.
She starts in the early morning hours of Sunday the 8th making repeated calls to Susan and to Colin and will beg, plead, yell, cuss, call people names. She calls her mom a moron. She is all over the place insisting that Colin come back home.
Just hours earlier, Kathy had taken Colin's house key and told him never to return. Now she was threatening him with something far more serious.
She'd say, "I reported the car stolen because the car is not in your name. It's in both our names, and you're not allowed to drive that car. I'm going to sell the car. I sold the car. I'm already up in Auburndale. I found a buyer whose aunt lives in that community and who gave me the gate code so I could come into the neighborhood in Auburndale. You're in big trouble, because I already sold that car." She was nowhere near Auburndale. You'll see the Ring video. She was at her home. But she made up this elaborate story about having gone to Auburndale, gotten the gate code from the buyer's aunt. She calls law enforcement. There's no secret that Colin is in Auburndale and that his grandmother has okayed it. It's okay with his probation officer. Everybody tells Kathy, let him stay in Auburndale. Despite everyone telling her, she wasn't having it. She was the one who was angry.
Even Kathy's own mother begged her to stay away from Colin.
I told her, I said, "When I get back, I will give him gas money and I will follow him there, or we can wait until Monday morning. Let's just wait. Don't go there. Don't have permission to go," because I didn't want her to start a fight with Colin. I was afraid that she would be combative, maybe go after him with a baseball bat, a gun, something. He had not been violent countless times with Kathy. Kathy had been violent with him countless times. I know my daughter. That's why I didn't want her coming that day to the house without me being there. I wanted her to wait the next day so that maybe she could calm down a little bit. I just know the facts about Kathy, having lived with her and worked with her, even to try to maintain her sanity, to try to maintain that she could keep her job as a teacher, to try to maintain that she wasn't trying to slice herself and kill herself.
Here's Detective Dan Peters reading the text messages Kathy sent to Colin that day.
Begins, "The car isn't there. Not sure what you did, but it's being sold as we speak to CarMax for $15,600. unless you'd like to reply to my text and tell me you are driving home right now. Didn't think so. It's a felony to drive a stolen car without insurance, and if you wreck it, that's it. You're violated your probation, violated the rules of the house, and now you won't answer me. You've left me with no choice.
In those texts, Kathy escalated her most serious threat yet. She claimed Colin had confessed to murdering his father and said she had 4 recordings to prove it. She warned that unless Colin came home, she would send them to family and friends.
The recordings of you admitting to killing and planning the murder, there are 4 different instances from my Ring camera, are all going to Bob, Susie, Amanda, and Chris at 3 p.m. today. You can keep hiding and running away from me. I almost had an Amber Alert issued until she admitted after midnight you were in Auburndale, which is why I agreed to give you until 10 a.m. to cool down and come home. I legally don't have a choice but to report you as a runaway. The police are going to bring you home, or DCFs will take you and eventually bring you home. Either way, you fucked up and list your chance to get off probation by October 5th, 2024. All because you didn't want to help me mount a bookshelf that took under 30 minutes. Remember, you chose this. You have 10 minutes to call me and fix this, Colin. I am signing this title and handing over the keys now.
To Thornhill, this was Kathy's trump card, the threat she could hold over her son forever. Whether the recordings existed or not didn't matter. What mattered was that Kathy believed Colin would think police would side with her, as they always had before.
Given the fact that her deadline of 3 p.m. when she was going to supposedly send these to all these people had long passed before she got to Colin, isn't it reasonable to think this is just another thing that she made up? Because if those things existed, they'd be out there.
Detectives combed through every Ring recording they could find. Not one contained Colin admitting to planning or committing his father's murder. Like so many of Kathy's accusations, this appeared to be another fabrication, an attempt to control her son. And when that failed, Kathy drove to the Hamptons in a rage, determined to bring Colin home. She did so despite warnings from her family, from law enforcement, even from Colin's probation officer, all telling her to let him stay with his grandmother. Neighbors would later describe her as the aggressor, speeding into the quiet community, tires squealing, slamming her car door, storming toward the house. Everything else that happened that day took place behind closed doors, and the case that followed remained almost entirely circumstantial. Was Colin a teenager who'd been plotting his own mother's death? Or was he a frightened boy, forced to defend himself against the very person he had begged authorities to protect him from? Colin's trial began in February 2025. Public interest was so intense, and the story had already taken hold. A psychopath teenager who'd killed both of his parents and somehow escaped conviction once before. That version of events was cemented within 72 hours of his arrest, but inside the courtroom, a key ruling from the judge reshaped everything. The jury would be told Colin had previously killed someone, but not that it was his father. That single decision stripped the prosecution of their most powerful argument, the sheer unlikelihood that the same young man could claim self-defense in the deaths of both his parents. So the state leaned heavily into who they said Colin was. They painted Kathy Griffith as a tragic figure, a mother who only wanted time with her son and paid the ultimate price for it.
The clock was ticking. Once he turned 18, she knew he was gone. He wanted nothing to do with her. He had told her flat out he wanted to kill her. He had attacked her before. He had already killed somebody in Oklahoma, and she knew what was going to happen to her. But despite that, all that she wanted was every single minute she could have with her son. That's all she wanted. Well, she got to spend the last seconds of her life with her son. As he washed down, as she gushed blood out of her open, gaping wound, the defendant sits there, a guilty person who stabbed his own mother in the neck and then watched her bleed out in front of him. The lady that brought him into this world here on earth, he took out of this world and this earth. She left this world knowing that the person that took her out was the son that she gave everything to. As he followed through with what he said he would do, if nothing else, he's a man of his word. He said he would kill his mom, and he took her out. Operation Kill Mom accomplished. That's exactly what Colin Griffith did.
The evidence from the crime scene was ambiguous, which meant the prosecution's entire case rested on convincing the jury that Colin Griffith had always been violent, that his history of threats and attacks showed a clear pattern of premeditation.
This was exactly what the defendant meant to do, and that this is exactly what the defendant had thought about doing and had wanted to do for quite some time. So much so that he told multiple people, including multiple Charlotte County Sheriff's Office deputies and his own grandfather. He wants to kill her. He's told people he's going to kill her. He's battered her and attacked her before on November 14th in Port Charlotte. And now he's just doing the same thing again. He grabbed his own mom by the hair. He thinks she's an evil bitch. And she said, stop, stop. You're hurting me. Let go. This is his mom begging and pleading for her own son to stop pulling her hair. Who does that? He does that, and he did it. Who is being violent to who? The mom is not being violent in any way, shape, or form to her son. She is doing nothing to him. But good old Colin Griffith grabs his mom, and he yanks her, he pulls her, he drags her. Who cares what verb you want to use?
For the first time, though, the defense had its chance to present Colin's side of the story.
I was not presenting those to you to just bash Kathy, to make her look like a horrible person. To the contrary, I was doing my job because the law says, and the judge will tell you, that you have to consider prior acts of violence, prior acts of aggression, a reputation for dangerous and violent behavior in deciding whether Colin was reasonable in defending himself against his mom. You have to decide the reasonableness of Colin's actions in light of all of those things. In light of the fact that she had pulled a gun on him before, in light of the fact that she had threatened to kill other people before, in light of the fact that she had attacked other people before with weapons. Some of these things in front of Colin. He knew all those things about her. He knew what she was capable of when she was angry. He knew all of this, and it was in his mind when she came to him September 8th.
Thornhill pointed out that Kathy had driven more than 2 hours to confront Colin that day, contradicting the idea he had planned and staged Operation Kill Mom. She reminded the jury that Colin had been trying for months to get away from his mother. Jail, foster care, even Baker Act facilities. At times, he was willing to tell police he was homicidal, simply because it meant he wouldn't be sent back home. Those threats no longer sounded like cold-blooded promises. They sounded like the desperate words of a teenager asking for help. The defense called only one witness, Kathy's own mother, Susan Detman.
I don't want to see my grandson go to prison for something he didn't do.
On the stand, Susan appeared steady, heartfelt, and grieving for both her daughter and her grandson. The prosecution likely lost ground with the jury when they pushed back too hard against her testimony.
Ma'am, it sounds like you're really quick to try to throw dirt on your dead daughter. Would you agree with that?
No, not at all. My dead daughter did the best that she could. We have a problem in this country with addressing mental health. We all know that. And that's what she had. She had mental health issues. At times, she was the greatest person on the world. Very intelligent.
I appreciate that, ma'am. I appreciate that.
In her closing, Thornhill left the jury with a single question.
The state has offered no proof, zero proof, of what actually happened in Susan's house on September 8th. None. Zero proof does not equal proof beyond a reasonable doubt. But isn't it reasonable to believe that Kathy, in her anger, her desperation to make Colin come home, that she picked up a knife and threatened him with it, which is in total conformance with how she's acted in the past? Absolutely, it's reasonable.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
On February 5th, 2025, after deliberating for 12 hours, the jury delivered its verdict.
State of Florida versus Colin Griffin. We, the jury, find as follows. As to the defendant in this case, the defendant, as to count one, the defendant is not guilty.
The verdict stunned the entire courtroom, including Amy Thornhill. At the start of the trial, it seemed impossible she could convince even one juror of Colin's innocence, let alone all 12. Behind him, his grandmother wept tears of relief, but not everyone agreed. In a statement after the verdict, the Polk County Sheriff's Office made its position clear. Our detectives firmly believe that Colin Griffith murdered his mother. During our investigation, detectives found witnesses that believe he also murdered his father in Oklahoma. That investigation is ongoing. For many, outrage followed. The judge's decision not to hear about his father's death almost certainly influenced the outcome. That day, Colin Griffith walked out of the Polk County Jail a free man, but carrying the weight of 2 deaths with him, and the possibility of future charges for the death of his father. In the aftermath, the acquittal of Colin Griffith has left behind more questions than answers. Questions about a system that failed both a troubled mother and her traumatized son. A tragedy years in the making. Catherine Griffith was not the one-dimensional victim prosecutors portrayed, nor was she the villain the defense described. As her mother said on the stand, "My daughter did the best she could. At times, she was the greatest person in the world." Kathy was a deeply troubled woman, shaped by trauma from an early age. Pregnant at 13, scarred by alleged domestic abuse, struggling with mental illness and addiction. Her love for her son was real, but it was complicated by her own demons and her inability to create a safe environment for either of them. The system built to protect them failed at almost every turn. Not for the lack of trying. Police, family services, even juvenile detectives, all appeared to act in good faith. Yet warning signs were missed, red flags overlooked, and cries for help from both mother and son were never enough to stop what happened that September evening in the Hamptons. The truth of what took place in that kitchen may never be fully known, but long before that knife was drawn, this story was already a tragedy. A tragedy no one was willing or able to interrupt.
Thornhill
Follow The Minds of Madness on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. To support the show and get access to ad-free episodes, extra content, and Patreon-exclusive episodes, go to patreon.com/madnesspod. To find us on Instagram and Facebook, search The Minds of Madness, and on Twitter using the handle @madnesspod. And also, by checking out our sponsors and using our promo codes, you're also helping support the show. We've got all the links in our episode notes. So until next week, thanks for listening.
Hi there, my name is Annie Elise, aka your true crime BFF and host of the podcast Serialously. I have been a true crime enthusiast forever, but I wished somebody would break down the cases for me like a friend, giving all the details and discussing every twist and turn. So I decided to create a podcast that does just that. Serialously with Annie Elise is topping the charts with over 1 million weekly downloads. I do the deep dives in these cases so you don't have to, diving into all the raw details, saying what we're all thinking, and in a conversational way, just like having a conversation with your best friend. So join me and let's talk all things true crime. Serialously with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.